The 2025 Kansas legislative session has entailed a lot for civil liberties in the state, which we will cover later in this episode. But Micah is here with me right now to talk about one bill in particular. This is Senate Concurrent Resolution 1611. This is a proposed rewrite of the state's constitution, which would overhaul the current selection process of Kansas Supreme Court judges and replace it with partisan elections instead. So at the time of this recording, this has, it's committee hearing tomorrow. No, past committee. Full floor tomorrow. Okay. So at the time of this recording, this bill is up for a hearing on the House floor. It does not go to Governor Kelly. If it passes the legislature, the bill does not go to Governor Kelly for a veto because it's a constitutional amendment. Instead, it would go directly to the voters for the 2026 election. So some listeners might remember that we voted on a proposed constitutional amendment in the 2022 August primary election. Micah, my first question is to set the stage for listeners about this new proposal. So this probably seems like it comes out of left field or out of nowhere for a lot of us. Can you explain what it means for lawmakers to have pushed this bill and why are they doing it now?
So like many things, this amendment has very deep roots. It may come as a surprise to folks who are hearing about it now for the first time. But it is something that really goes back more than a decade. About a decade ago, Governor Sam Brownback, folks may remember him, pushed through a huge variety of proposals that resulted in particular in Kansas schools not receiving the same level of funding that they had previously. And school interests, the teachers, parents, students, school districts, brought a suit before the Kansas Supreme Court, where the Kansas Supreme Court ruled that the governor and the legislature's school funding mechanism was unconstitutional, violated the Kansas State Constitution, which guarantees sort of equitable funding. And there were some interests in the state, including Governor Brownback and members of the legislature who were then there and who are there now, who disliked the fact that the Kansas Supreme Court ruled in this particular way. They were infuriated that the Kansas Supreme Court would dare to protect the rights of students, of parents, of school districts, and would not simply bow to what the legislature wanted. That was more than 10 years ago. Well, these folks have long memories, because that is really when their desire to change the composition of the Kansas Supreme Court began. It began with them not getting their way. It began with them wanting to have a power grab to be able to assert their control free from any accountability, free from anyone else having anything to say about it, free from the constitutional protections. And so that's how it started 10 years ago, but it's only gotten worse since then, in that the Kansas Supreme Court has continued to be independent, has continued to be impartial, has continued to interpret the law as it believes is the right way to do it. I don't always agree with the decisions the Kansas Supreme Court makes. The ACLU doesn't always agree with the decisions the Kansas Supreme Court makes, but it has done so in a way that is independent and impartial and where they're trying to do their best. And the legislature hasn't liked that. They especially didn't like it that the Kansas Supreme Court ruled that there is a right to bodily autonomy, which includes the right to reproductive freedom, the ability to access abortion health care. And the legislature hated that. And so folks will remember in 22, we voted about not inserting into the Constitution something that would allow a ban on abortion. We did that because the Supreme Court had ruled that something existed there. So this is all a way of saying that the legislature has been mad at the court for a long time. You can sum it up as the legislature is mad. And rather than doing what you would hope one would do in a democracy with a system of checks and balances, which is bring new proposals, try and find ways to work within the rights and freedoms that belong to everyone. Attorney General Chris Kobach and his allies in the state legislature have said, let's just change the way we select the court instead. We're mad at your decisions. Rather than focusing on the public, we'll just change the people in the hopes that we'll get different decisions instead. And it's coming now because this is when they think they have the votes to do it.
And so we're rewriting the Constitution because they don't want to take no for an answer. So tell me exactly what this bill would change if it were to, of course, go to the ballot for voters to vote on and then to pass, what is the system that we would be left with?
Yeah, so that last point is critically important, that even if the legislature passes this tomorrow, or we're talking on Tuesday, it's supposed to be in the House on Wednesday, even if the legislature passes it with the two-thirds majority, all they're really doing is referring it to the voters. Our process in Kansas requires the voters to be the ones to make constitutional amendments. The legislature only gets to refer them to the voters to make a decision. So nothing is done until it is done. And here it wouldn't be done until August of 2026. So still a long ways off. We've got a lot of work ahead of us. The current system for selecting Supreme Court justices in Kansas is called the merit-based system. And it consists of a panel, a nominating commission. Some of the members are appointed by the governor, whoever the governor is at that moment. And some of them are elected by members of the bar, so Kansas attorneys. These tend to be like retired Supreme Court justices, legal scholars, folks who are really deep into what the Supreme Court does. It's a mix of the two. So it's a mix of non-lawyers and lawyers. It's a mix of whoever is in the governor's office then and a much more geographically diverse and perpetual base from attorneys. And they have an open process where they receive nominations. They talk about it in public. The meetings of this commission are open to the public. They're recorded. They are about as transparent as you can get. In fact, sometimes there have even been complaints that it's too open, that they can't say reservations that they might have about any particular candidate because there is no clandestineness about this at all. The meetings are open. The vote is open. Everything. They arrive at three names that they would recommend to the governor, and then the governor picks one of those three names. And she or he pick a name based on someone who is qualified, someone who has experience, someone who has judicial temperament, someone who has ethics, all of those things. And so we get highly qualified, highly capable people on the Kansas Supreme Court. But the great thing about our system is that it's not just a merit in that way. It's not just, okay, now you're on the court for the rest of your life. You know, at the federal government, the United States Supreme Court, once you're on there, you're on for as long as you want to be. They are life appointments. In Kansas, that's not the case. In Kansas, we have retention elections. So at the very next general election, whoever the governor nominates goes before the people, goes before the voters of Kansas, and they have to say yes or no, keep this person or not. So if you got someone who is really doing a foul job, you have the opportunity early on, and then every 6 years thereafter, for their entire tenure, to say, we the voters don't think they're doing a good job. So our system really combines the best of both worlds. It combines both the independence, impartiality, merit, and accountability for the voters to weigh in. Mm-hmm. The legislature doesn't like any of that. They want the worst of both worlds rather than the best of both worlds. What they want are direct partisan elections, where every couple of years people will vote in wildly expensive partisan elections. Candidates will run against one another. You'll have Supreme Court justices campaigning on platforms. And you'll have a situation like they have in Wisconsin, where they spend $45 million on each and every Supreme Court race. And there are seven members of the court. So it really invites outside interests. It invites big money. It invites putting the Supreme Court for sale rather than making it about merit and qualifications.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that's very helpful. And I think it's really interesting to think about how that also inserts sort of the political environment into the judicial branch, which was sort of intended to be, you know, separate from that in the way that the legislature is. And so I think that's really helpful context for what moment we're in now. And you talked about sort of the past decade and the Brownback era. But I think we should go back even further. So we know that the current judicial selection system in Kansas was created with an amendment in 1958. to go way, way back, right? And this followed a really a major political scandal at the time. It passed with almost 70% of votes. And so I'd love to hear what you, I'd love to get an overview of that historical context and sort of the moment that that happened and why it was changed back in 1958.
So Kansas is relatively unique in that there haven't been a whole lot of huge political scandals in Kansas history. We have a reputation for relatively clean and ethical politics. People disagree about issues. We have very strong fights about what is right, what is wrong, what we should do. But we don't really have a reputation for political corruption and for scandal. This thing back in the 1950s is the one major exception to that rule. And this was a scandal that they called the triple play because it involved three people. It involved the governor, it involved the lieutenant governor, and it involved the chief justice of the Supreme Court. So the incumbent governor at the time lost his bid for re-election in the primary. He was running in the Republican primary. He lost his re-election bid in the primary, not in the general election. And so in the waning days of his term, after August, before January, he conspired with the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and his lieutenant governor to shuffle all these positions around. And so the incumbent governor resigned early, before January, got the Supreme Court Chief Justice to resign his position, and then got his lieutenant governor to name the governor as the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court instead. The former governor, right? So they moved seats, right? It was a game of musical chairs. And did this sort of in the dead of night, in the very last days of the term, after having been rejected by the voters at the ballot box. And this struck everyone as not a prime example of good government. And so that was why there was an almost immediate reaction across the political spectrum to say, the system that we have now is not a good one. We need instead to create a system that creates transparency, that creates accountability, that creates a merit system while still giving voters a way into this discussion. And so this constitutional amendment was passed back in 1958 and has been in place ever since for very good reason. And I think it remains a good reason today because I think we continue to see that there is the possibility, again, for big money interests to weigh in, for good government not to be observed, and for there to be opportunities for abuse. The system that we have is one that minimizes those opportunities for abuse of the process in a way that is really necessary and is responsive to a real thing that happened, right? We don't have to be alarmist and say, oh, what if? No, it actually happened. That's how come we have the system that we have.
And have for, what, 60?
70 some odd years, right?
There you go.
In fact, we have a system that in many respects is the envy of the country. Mm-hmm. There is not a single state that has shifted from merit-based system like we have now back to an election system. There are a number of states that have shifted from elections to a merit-based system because of the opportunities that they see to control against scandal, to control against big money interest. There's not a single state that is doing what we are talking about now, which is going from a merit-based system back to the old regressive, revanchist, destructive way.
Oh, that's such helpful context. And I'm learning a lot. And I think, so I found this judicial selection map, which to your point, you know, Kansas shares a merit selection process with 13 other states. And as you said, none have gone back to the partisan election process. So what would, do I need to read through all of this?
Where you at right now?
We can just do it.
The answer is no, but I don't know. I don't have it in front of me to tell.
The answer is no, but I don't know why.
Do I need to describe the entire fucking map? Okay. We can just go for it, and then you can decide if you want to cut it.
Yeah.
There are 14 other states, mostly concentrated in the north of the U.S., that follow nonpartisan elections. And then in the northeast, there are 10 states that use just gubernatorial appointments, so no committee process. And then finally, we get to the current proposal, which is partisan elections. And right now, there are only 7 states that follow this process, and that includes Texas, Louisiana, and Alabama. So you talked a little bit, Micah, about Wisconsin and the impact there. I would be curious broadly what you... I would be curious broadly how proposed partisan elections would compare in Kansas versus the other states' version of these partisan elections.
I think what we certainly know about partisan elections wherever they go is that they become fights between out-of-state big money interests. They become less about the voters and constituents of the state and more an opportunity for out-of-state big money interests to wage war against one another. And that Kansans would not be well served by such a process. I think what we also know about what has been proposed now is that the legislature has said, oh, we are going to, the amendment proposes we're going to switch over to these partisan elections, but doesn't actually tell us anything else about the logistics of how that will happen. What happens to the 7 people who are currently sitting on the court? They say, we don't know, we'll figure it out after you pass it. What happens about terms after that? Who gets assigned to which role? We don't know. We'll figure that out after you pass it. Right now, there are several members of the court who come from western Kansas, who come from more rural Kansas. It is a very geographically diverse court that we have now because the selection process is one that tries to be intentional and thoughtful about that. It doesn't drive it, but there is always the real desire to make sure that all parts of Kansas and all different types of background are represented on the court. In straight partisan elections, that is unlikely to happen. There are no districts here. The judicial seats will not be carved into districts, or at least if you ask the legislators about it, they say, well, maybe they will. We'll figure it out after you pass it. But there's no guarantee of that. Instead, what is more likely to happen is that the largest communities in the state, Johnson County, Sedgwick County, will have outsized influence in a way that will swamp the rest of the state, because that's what happens in statewide elections, period. All of these things are not figured out. The legislature just says, you will figure it out after you pass it. Trust us. I don't think the legislature has really earned that trust from Kansans in recent years. And what we certainly know, again, is that all of those things are going to happen against a backdrop of millions of dollars of out-of-state money coming in and trying to direct the court in a favored way rather than something that is responsive to what Kansans actually want.
That's helpful. And, you know, we're talking about, well, let's see, how do I transition this? So a lot of this bill has been constructed, and we've heard a lot of talking points around criticisms of the current process. I'm curious if you want to name the irony of you know the supporters of this bill and their criticisms of the current process, and the way that this process has also cropped up on a separate bill. You know, for all the criticisms that they have.
Right. So there's been so much framing of this from the proponents as being about process, about being about good government, and how nominating commissions couldn't possibly ever deliver good government or good process. And yet, at the very same moment, the legislature is advancing changes that would create a nominating commission for other vacancies in state government or federal office. So right now, if a United States senator resigns early or leaves office for whatever reason, the governor gets to appoint someone on a temporary basis, and then there's an election at the next opportunity. But the governor appoints someone in the interim. The same happens for the lower state-level offices, for insurance commissioner, attorney general, stuff like that. And it happens with some frequency. Not often, but every couple of years, someone will get elected to another office or resign, and so a position comes vacant. The current legislature is trying to change that to create a nominating commission consisting largely of themselves, not even a mix of everyday people in them, but just only themselves, to submit names from the same party as the person who resigned, and then the governor would have to pick from one of the names they submit. So at the very same time that they're criticizing nominating commissions, they're creating one, and creating one that consists of themselves. They nominate themselves to nominate, to be the nominators, to nominate. Which tells us, again, that all of the arguments about this are not about good government. They're not about process. That is a fig leaf to conceal the actual agenda, which is that the legislature doesn't like the decisions the court has made. And in particular, they are mad about decisions protecting reproductive freedom. So anytime Chris Kobach or Ty Masterson or any of the proponents of this come and say it's about good government, we know that that's not actually what it is, that they're not being forthright. Instead, it is because they want to get rid of abortion. They want to ban abortion in the state of Kansas. They want to get rid of a school funding formula. That's what it's about. That's the whole shebang. And anytime they tell you differently, tell them that you know what the real deal is.
Absolutely. And so at the time of this recording, the bill, as we said, is up for a hearing on the House floor. Can you tell us what comes next or what listeners could do in the meantime as we sort of wait for this bill to make its way through the legislature?
So depending on when you're listening to this, if they haven't actually voted on it yet, if it's still pending, then it's critically important that folks be in touch with their members of the State House of Representatives to say that they oppose this constitutional amendment, SCR 1611. Depending on when you are listening to it, they may have voted on it, they may not. So if they haven't, get in touch. It's never too late before they have voted. If they have voted and it's been referred to the voters, well, then buckle your seatbelts. We're in for a long ride here because we have until August of 2026. It will go on the August 4th, 2026 ballot. So if that is where we are, circle that date in red on your calendar, underline it, make it clear that you know what the stakes are for that day, and then start talking to every living soul you know. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell strangers in the grocery store about this constitutional amendment, and make sure they know that it is not about process. It is not about whether elections are good or not. Elections are generally good. We like elections. It's not about that. This is about whether we are going to allow the legislature to ban abortion in Kansas. This is about whether the Kansas legislature is going to fund our schools. This is about whether immigrants are going to have rights in Kansas. This is about whether LGBTQ plus people are going to be protected by the Kansas state constitution or not. This is about whether there's going to be any due process in our criminal legal system. This is about whether there's going to be any accountability, transparency. This is about whether there's going to be the separation of powers and democracy in Kansas or not. That's what's really on the ballot, and we got to make sure that every living soul knows that, because when they read the ballot language on that date you have circled on your calendar, August 4th, 2026, they're not going to read the word abortion. They're going to read a bunch of legal gobbledygook that's going to sound like it doesn't do anything at all. And we got to make sure they know what the real story is.
Absolutely. Well, Micah, it's always so great to talk to you and hear your insights. And I appreciate you joining us here on Marching On.
Thanks.
I will say, what was that?
I was going to say, do we want to transition between this and Lindsay and Melina, or